Welcome back to Knox in Nature, a podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else we feel like talking about. Today is a little bit of a different episode for you listening. The audio may sound a little bit different, possibly a little bit worse, which I do apologize for. We have not only a different recording software, but a completely different setup. My microphone is currently plugged directly into my computer rather than our audio mixer. So things are going to be a little bit off. It's episode 21 today, and it is just myself here. As you heard in the last episode, Jared is moving to Texas. So he's wrapping some things up with that. Justin is preoccupied doing adult things, and that leaves me, as well as our guest today, who we will introduce here in just a second. But yeah, if you support the podcast, we would appreciate it if you'd go give us a follow on Instagram. That is KnoxInNature_podcast. And as you will hear soon, we're going to have some links for you to check out, and you'll be able to find all that stuff over on the Instagram page. So if you're listening to this on the 25th, the day it releases, all that stuff will be not only pinned to our Instagram page, but also on the Instagram story. And that is the best place to get updates for when episodes are releasing, if anything changes with our schedule, so on and so forth. So without further ado, let's get into our guest. Vivian, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing good. For the folks listening at home, would you like to give an introduction as to where you grew up, how you grew up, and how you ended up where you're at right now?
Sure. So I grew up just pretty much down the road from Nick. I went to school with his younger brother my whole life. Nick and I became friends. How long ago was that?
Summer in there. Acquaintances, I guess. We kind of became friends after high school entirely, doing our own, you know, bow stuff and hunting and whatnot. So yeah,
I've always
somewhere in there.
Yeah, always bow hunted, and Nick's helped me a lot, taught me a lot about archery and helped me shoot better. But yeah, we've done a little turkey hunting together, and I graduated high school in 2022 in the same town, and then I moved to Montana for college, and I am still living here now. I don't plan to leave anytime soon, by any means. And
I don't blame you.
Hard to have bad days here. But don't move here. It's too crowded.
Understandable.
And yeah, I hunt and fish a bunch out here. My boyfriend's a fly fishing outfitter. We have a fly shop that we run, which is a lot of fun. Fly fishing's been fun to learn. We elk hunt, deer hunt, turkey hunt, pretty much do everything. Hike quite a bit in the spring for sheds, and we're actually doing some turkey hunting this weekend, so yeah, hard to complain.
Yeah, first bull this past fall too.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Opening day.
As a good looking bull too. I mean, I'm definitely jealous, you know. A couple episodes ago, we covered our backpacking trip out in Utah, and we spent the morning of one of the days in Colorado, and then there were parts of Utah that were in the mountains as well, and it's, you know, a bad day in the mountains was me being sore as opposed to being at work or something, so I'll take it. But no, it's very interesting and really, really cool. I think one of the really cool things about what you've done, obviously growing up in northern Michigan, we have a lot of things to do here, but not so much pertaining to what you're into right now. You know, there is elk hunting, but it's all lottery. You can't necessarily just pull a resident tag. There's turkey hunting, there's deer hunting, but as I'm sure you're well aware of, even the deer hunting's not great here. So it's been really, really cool to kind of live vicariously through you and watching all of that. That's been pretty sweet. So for you people listening, that is the qualifications, right? That's she knows what she's talking about. So, yeah, the main reason for bringing Vivian on the podcast today is that she released an ebook. And so before we get into, the contents and things like that, what made you, I guess, first of all, how did you end up writing an ebook? Was this, did you have the idea to do this, or was this something that you were prompted for?
Yeah, good question. So I'm getting a marketing degree. I'm about to graduate here in like 2 weeks, which is pretty cool. And one of my final classes requires that I create, basically the parameters were to create and sell a digital product. So that was pretty much all I was given in terms of a prompt. And I thought on it a lot, and then ultimately ended up deciding that I was going to write my ebook that's called Wilder Ways. And it's essentially just a hodgepodge compilation of tons of different wild game recipes, remedies. Like I've made deer tallow lotion. So dough my dad killed in Michigan. I took all the fat off of it, rendered it down, whipped it into like a lavender lotion. So that recipe's in there. I made homemade bone broth out of the bones from the bull I killed last fall out here. I'm trying to think what else. I made liver supplements. Like, that's kind of trendy right now, kind of Joe Rogan-y type. But they're pretty expensive, so it's really easy to make your own. You just need like a dehydrator and just grind up some liver. So that was off a whitetail buck I killed out here in the fall. So yeah, essentially I just wrote up an ebook of some of my favorite recipes. There's like a elk tenderloin with a huckleberry glaze in there, which is good. It's very Montana between the elk and the huckleberry and all of that. And just a couple other wild game recipes I've tried over the years and invented in a sense, I guess. And I threw them all together. And in the end, I'm super proud of the finished product. Using more of a harvested animal is something I've always been really passionate about. Like just learning different ways to use different parts. I'm also probably what you could call crunchy, and I care about eating clean and whole foods. So I think it's pretty cool that this is all organic meat, ethically sourced, and I know where it came from. I know what went into it. I've got some tips for like meat processing in the book. Yeah, basically it's just kind of like a crunchy girl's guide to using an animal to make everything from lotion to dinner. And yeah, it's been fun. I've had a lot of fun promoting it and talking about it. Sharing some of these recipes. A couple of them are like family ones that have been in my family for a long time and hold strong memories for me. So yeah, it's kind of the synopsis of it.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I was feeding through the ebook, and I haven't got through the whole thing, but one of the recipes I'm really excited to try is the dill pickle venison recipe. I think that's really cool. So there's some good stuff in there. And in a moment, Vivian, if it's all right with you, I want to read a portion of it, because there's in the intro that just kind of speaks on the lifestyle piece, which is something that we talk about a lot, because especially when it comes to bow hunting, you have to dedicate so much time to be able to perfect a skill or master a skill, I guess, and be able to accomplish that task of successfully harvesting an animal. And so for us, when I say us, the guys at Knox Nature, but as well as yourself, it really is a way of life, whether it's hunting or actually consuming the wild game. I mean, it's a completely different perspective on just going to the grocery store and buying your food. And I can personally attest, I have seen Vivian quarter or process two deer in one night before. One doe and one giant buck. So I get a call at, I don't even know when that was, when Darren shot his buck, but that was, I want to say it was like 10 o'clock at night. And they're like, hey, we need your help hanging this deer. It's like, okay, well, you guys got it in the truck. And I show up, deer's hanging. Not that one, this other big one over here. So, yeah. It's been some crazy stuff, but it's really cool. And I think for the people, you know, the readers of your book and the listeners of the podcast, I think it's really reassuring to know that, you know, you're not just writing about something that you've done research on. These are things that you actually do, that you stand behind, that you believe in. It's kind of an extension of, you know, your personality or your own way of life, which is really, really cool. So I'm going to read, Viv, if it's okay with you, I'm going to read a little part of this. And like I said, I think this just speaks to the lifestyle portion of things. So this is technically page 3. It says, for me, it's not just about hunting. It's about honoring the animal and using every piece I can, all while living a toxin-free, healthy lifestyle. I've found that wild meats are one of the best ways to connect with the land around and nourish my body. Whether it's making homemade elk bone broth or learning how to turn venison into delicious Italian sausage, I want to show you how easy and rewarding it is to transform every part of your harvested game into something useful and nourishing. This isn't just about cooking. It's about a mindset, a way of life where we embrace everything nature has to offer. To me, I think that sums up perfectly, obviously, not only how you feel about things, but probably how a lot of people feel about consuming wild game. Because it's not just about, you know, eating a tasty backstrap or, you know, having a non-GMO or, you know, antibiotic free piece of meat. You know, it's as organic as it gets. But it's not just about that. It's about having a connection to the ground that we walk on every day. And there's no better way to do that, in my opinion. And I think it's really cool. Not just using the meat, but using all the parts of the animal. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And one part of that little bit you wrote or read there that I think is also part of the driving motivation behind compiling these recipes is you mentioned like useful and easy. And I kind of wrote this a little bit with the mind of like, maybe it's someone who likes to hunt and is looking for new recipes. But I also kind of thought about like, okay, so what about the wife, girlfriend, fiance, whatever, that's at home and is like, man, like he just keeps bringing me this ground venison and I have no idea what to do with this. And like, I can't do tacos every night. I can't do spaghetti every night. Like, I just need more ideas. Like maybe they just kind of like some more like elevated ideas. So that's kind of what I tried to do. Like, it's not, I don't have just regular like grilled backstrap in there. It's backstrap with the huckleberry glaze. Like just kind of tried to elevate things a little bit. The roast that's in there isn't your traditional venison roast. It's a little bit different. Just kind of tried to make it a little bit more elevated wild game that isn't just stuff you're going to find in any old, like, I don't know, Mossy Oak cookbook.
Right. Yeah. And I think that is what separates the difference of, you know, someone who's just trying to promote a cookbook, you know, to get a sale off of something versus a passion project. Because from the sounds of it, you could have gone a lot of ways and you could have sold sold a t-shirt on it that, you know, has like, whatever, some sort of conservation agency on it, got their blessing to use their logo and sold t-shirts to help promote that. Or, you know, you could have done a ton of different things within the industry, but, you found something that you're passionate about and turned that into a guide to bring other people to the passion. And I can relate to that with the podcast, because the entire purpose of starting this podcast was the conversations that specifically Justin and I would have for about a year. And then when Jared came on and was working with us full time as well, we would sit and have conversations for hours about all kinds of stuff like this. And we figured, hey, why not just put it out there, you know, spread our message, put our belief systems out there, our knowledge on, you know, what we know, how things should be done. And, you know, at least for some people, they really enjoy it. So, it's really cool to have that kind of a connection rather than just, how many times can you see, salt and pepper both sides, cook it for however long and, you know, whatever. There's probably 1,000 ways to cook venison. And personally, I am the guy who's okay with just tacos and spaghetti and chili and burgers all the time. But, I get it, you know, that stuff gets repetitive and it's nice to try new things. So, I am excited to try a couple of these recipes. It'll be fun.
Yeah, and I think there's some people who are like, man, I just feel like I choke down the meat. Like, of course, ethical hunters are never going to waste meat by any means, but maybe they don't love it the way they should, or just there's people that are nervous to try venison because they tried it once and it was super gamey. Like, that's what I tried to just kind of weave into that book. It's just like, if you care for the meat properly and you prepare it properly, and I mean, you're never going to like an overcooked elk or deer steak. Like, you just, it's never going to be that great. That's when it gets gamey. Like, you just need to learn what the properties really are of wild game and the things you can do. Like, I mean, my bowl wasn't gamey by any means, but I really love that huckleberry sauce has a little bit of vinegar in it, and it just kind of breaks down any of that might be in it. So it's just about learning how to work with it. And I mean, you'd be surprised. I eat elk probably 5 nights a week, I'd say. And I can't even tell the difference between it and beef. Granted, I mean, it was a particularly good tasting bowl, but I think when you understand the properties of wild game, it's kind of hard to mess up. And I don't miss beef in my life at all. I mean, I use ground elk like you would anything else.
Yeah, there's a huge benefit to using that. And I know you talked about that a little bit, for multiple reasons why wild game would be more beneficial. And for me, I think there's certain things, you know, I tend to like a leaner cut of meat anyway. I'm the guy who's cutting the fat off of his steak and sets it aside. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just me personally. But, when it comes to, venison steaks, they're lean anyway because it's a lean animal. And so I tend to prefer, like, for instance, you know, same cut of meat, I would prefer a deer tenderloin, a venison tenderloin, over a filet mignon, just because I know it's like, okay, I'm feeding myself. This is something that I actually provided for myself. And I know it's not only going to nourish my body, but it's going to taste really good too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely something empowering about it. And it's something I've leaned into more, especially after moving out here. It's like I have moments of like, holy shit, like this meat yesterday, it was in a game bag on my pack, and I carried it out of the mountains on a day that was like, I mean, like it, I think it took 2 trips to get my bull out. So 24 miles total. Like, I did 24 miles of hiking to get this bull out, and now I'm eating it. Like, it's just super cool. And then I get home and process it and get it all in the freezer and watch the freezer fill. And I don't know. I love the feeling. It's super gratifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially after a 24 mile hike, that's got to be rewarding. And that's not going to be a 24 mile flat hike. You know, you're in some terrain if you're packing a bull out. So
yeah, don't get me wrong. We get McDonald's after the pack out though.
Hey, you know, you got to reward yourself somehow. You can't make it too easy.
When we packed Danner's bull out, it would have been 2 years ago. We got back to the truck at like 10 and McDonald's was all that was open. And I think we probably ate 5,000 calories a piece. I mean, it was like burgers and fries and shakes and just all the things. It's like one of my favorite memories of just us back in the hotel room, sitting on the bed, just silently devouring like thousands of calories in McDonald's. So before I get too on my high horse about eating clean,
Yeah, right.
unprocessed, chemical-free meat, I feel like I should include that caveat.
Yeah, well, the difference is you probably felt like garbage after eating the McDonald's, you know, because I'm one of those people who I don't, it's not that I don't eat fast food, but especially something like McDonald's, I try to avoid as much as possible. It's like, oh, let's go to a sandwich shop or I'll pick up a slice of pizza or something like that. But most of the time after eating something like that versus eating a cleaner food, you just feel like garbage. And it's just, you get a little bit of energy and then you just crash. And it just, everything feels, you feel a little gross.
Yeah, I think that's one of those parts of maturing. Like 5 years ago, I would have never really thought about it, but not that we're that old, but I definitely notice those things now. Like, oh, I don't feel good after I ate that. And it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could say the same for processing venison and drinking beer, though, because that... you know, you gotta be careful before you overdo it, you know, especially on a 70 some degree day. I mean, early antlerless this past September, I think it was like 74 degrees by the time we got those deer out of the woods. It was hot. It was really hot.
Was that on my dad's farm?
Yeah, it was. It was, and you know, we had 5 or 6 deer or something like that. The three that I shot were just like square in the lungs. I mean, they were 30-yard shots, so I would hope so, but they were square in the lungs. So you're just getting deer breath all around you. And it's like, man, I'm trying to not lose my lunch here, but this is going to be rough. It's just too hot.
Yeah, it is hot. Ugh.
So you'd mentioned harvesting your bull, obviously, and then you harvested a whitetail this past fall as well.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So that was, did you say with my bow? Or
you were no, just this past fall. Because you shot one with your bow in Wisconsin in the,
yeah.
what would that, 2023 season? Or was that the 2024?
Yep, 2023, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, the whitetail buck was with a rifle this past fall, yeah. Montana's just general season. My boyfriend's also a elk and deer hunting guide, so I was lucky enough that the outfitter he works for, they both let me come out and hunt on their ranches they lease. So it was private land. My bull was public land, but hey, it was so much fun. And I mean, I hadn't even hunted public land until I came out to Montana. So
really,
yeah, I don't think I'd ever hunted public land.
I guess you really didn't have a need to necessarily, but that's kind of cool actually. First public land harvest was a bull elk. I guess,
yeah.
Well, you had shot some grouse and stuff, right?
Yeah, like grouse and I don't even know if I'd shot a public land turkey yet. Yeah, I think that would have been my first public land harvest. Yeah.
That's cool. That's
yeah.
Really cool. What was the I'm sure both were challenging in their own respects, but what was the difference, or what was a surprising challenge hunting whitetail versus elk? You know, was your elk, was it significantly harder because it was private, or did you feel like it was just harder because you were hunting elk?
That's kind of a tough question. It's just such a different beast. I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, I've always said that, like trying to explain to Dan or my boyfriend, like when he was getting ready for his first whitetail hunt and hunting like a tree stand, and he was like just kind of thinking it was going to be super boring and not hard, and I was like, you don't get it, it's a different kind of hard. Like sitting and just having faith in the spot you picked and hoping something's going to walk under you is really hard.
It's mentally tough for sure.
Yeah, but I do like about elk hunting that it's more of like a, okay, if I just, I mean, I can go one more ridge, like I can just keep moving and then maybe there's going to be something there. Like you kind of get to manifest your destiny a little bit more, which, don't get me wrong, also super mentally tough. It's not like I'm out there just like, hiking a bajillion miles and doing great and in super high spirits. Like, I moan and bitch all the time about it. Like, I try to be pretty tough when we're out there, but I certainly am not like some hiking. Like, I don't love hiking, but I like hunting, of course. I love to hunt. So,
You should have heard me at the top of Angel's Landing.
I bet.
No,
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even know why I did this. This is gonna be, I'm gonna be so sore tomorrow. It was a shit show. 3,500 feet in elevation, and the entire climb for I did 3,500 feet total. I don't know what the gain was, but the entire climb up to Angel's Landing was just vertical switchbacks, basically. It was
Yeah.
exhausting.
Yeah, it can get tiring, but it's a lot of fun when you know you're headed somewhere, like, and there's certain parts of the state. I mean, Montana's terrain is so varied. It still blows my mind. I mean, you can drive 2 hours and be in breaks country. Not quite breaks, but I mean, it takes about 10 hours to drive across the state. And I mean, on one end you are in breaks, and then on the other end you're in really big mountain ranges. And then up in my area, it's like smaller mountains. We've got some big ones, but super heavily timbered. And I don't love to hike around here as much just because it's so thick that you can't see. But some of the states elk country and where we go elk hunt is really beautiful and a lot more open. So it's fun to hike around and see new places and lay eyes over new country. And it's a lot more glassing, lots of sitting and glassing. I mean, the day I killed my bull, we sat up on a ridge all day. I think we started hiking in at maybe 4 a.m. Oh, maybe it wasn't that early. I can't remember, but hiked in really early and sat all day from, I think we made it up the top by like 6 or so. Maybe it was 7. Anywho, and caught a glimpse of the bull at like 4 in the afternoon, maybe, and then he dipped back into the timber again and moved in a little bit closer on him, and then he came back out again, like damn near close to like not sunset dark, but like shooting hour sunset, like half hour before sunset type of thing. So, yeah, and we just sat and glassed all day. I mean, the wind was whipping, it was nasty. So, different types of tough for sure. I mean, it's a lot more physically tough for sure, but the mental's still there. And I find it physically and mentally tough to sit in a tree stand freezing cold all day too. So it's just different. I don't know.
That's what they make Sika gear for.
That's true.
Now, are you at a lot higher elevation hunting elk than compared to the whitetail? Are the elk there up higher?
You'd kind of be surprised. I mean, yes and no. Around where I live, I mean, we have whitetail that some days I'm like, what are you doing up here? Like, it is November and you are way too high. Like, you are like intermingling with mule deer. Like, they're just hanging out really high. So, but down there where we see elk, like where we elk hunt, I've seen mule deer there. I've never seen whitetails quite there, but yeah, these whitetails are pretty unique. And the mountain whitetails are honestly really fun. They're all just super like dark horned because they live in thick timber, so it's cool. They're a lot of fun to hunt. Danner and I had some really fun hunts this last fall because yeah, I killed mine fairly early in the season. It was the rut, so it was like early to mid November, and then he and I killed his like over Thanksgiving week kind of, and it was just a super fun timber hunt. And yeah, just getting up in the mountains, and it's just kind of amazing. I actually rattled his buck in, which was a lot of fun. Two of them came out on the top of a ridge, so it's yeah, the mountain whitetails are pretty cool, and sometimes you just see a glimpse of them and then they're gone because it's just so thick and they're rutting hard. And yeah, so to answer your question, the whitetails here do live pretty high sometimes.
That's actually surprising. I guess it kind of makes sense. They're probably also just, like anything, trying to stay hidden, away from predators, but also looking for cover for themselves and feeding and whatnot. But that's really cool. rattling in a whitetail, man, I've only done that one time, and it was not a legal buck. So, you know, there's that. But,
yeah.
Michigan cool. whitetails are just a different game. I mean,
they are a different game.
It's unfortunate. There's a lot wrong with the way that the deer herd is managed, and I think it's getting better. My turkey tag this year is actually an E-tag, so they're not printing out physical tags anymore, but they still want you to like put your tag number and your name on a piece of duct tape and stick it to the turkey. Like they have some weird regulations you have to follow, but.
Really? I love Michigan's tags. Yeah. That's a bummer.
Yeah, I don't know. It was, the E-tag thing makes sense. But if they still want you to tag the thing physically, I don't understand why they wouldn't. You should have to report over, like, on your phone. That makes sense. You get, I forget what it is, 72 hours or something like that for the whitetail.
Well, in theory, you punching your tag should do that for it. I mean, like, we use e-tags here. You can print them at home or you can use e-tags. And Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has a really nice tag website that, like, totally puts Michigan's online sites to shame. Like, I have a nice app on my phone that has all my tags, and they're all downloaded onto my phone. And it's pretty easy for me when... I mean, like, I killed a turkey last Saturday, and I just went on my app and hit validate harvest, and it immediately, like, recorded the time. I don't think it takes your location, but that sort of thing. And then there's no, at least not for, like, turkey, there's not, like, a mandatory, you have to check it in like you do with deer in Michigan. We get surveys for sure. I just got my elk and deer surveys in the last couple months. Someone just calls you. I mean, if you're going to have e-tags, why not have that be your data collection system? That doesn't really seem intuitive to me.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know. It was weird. I did get, they're kind of like doing it half-assed, because I had my, the place we took the deer for processing, and we explained this earlier on, but I'm not sure if you heard it. For that early antler list, we had like six deer. There was four of us that were capable of processing deer. It's like we would have been at it all night, and it was hot outside. So we took him to a processor, just get it done, Amish guy. And they sent my deer skulls off for CWD testing. And the DNR, they call you, hey, whatever, and, surprise, we're CWD free around here, but... I'm not sure why they do it the way that they do it. I think they've got some bad advice from some people who don't know what they're talking about, but hopefully things get better. I think we need just a different management. I mean, I don't really, the tags or whatever, like as long as it's relatively easy to tag your harvest legally so that you're not, accidentally committing a crime. I care more about like are we gonna put an age restriction on things? Are we gonna do antler point restrictions? Are we gonna go to a one buck state? Where you get one tag? Are we gonna do earn a buck, which has been my preference for years? Shoot a doe, then you could shoot a buck. Typically they do that like the year prior, so you successfully harvest a doe, you get a buck tag for the following year. I don't know, but I think giving people the opportunity to shoot $2 and like at least in our area you can your combo tag, it's not restricted, so it's three or more on one side. You could have a 6 point in or a basket five if it's got three on one side. You're talking about a 2.5 year old, which is just not ideal for conservation and growing a healthy deer herd. People are shooting spikes basically, so I don't know what they're doing.
I mean, Michigan needs to be a one buck tag at a bare minimum. I'm sure this is something you guys hammer a lot on here, but
yeah, we hammer more on crossbows. So,
oh, okay,
go ahead.
No. Funny, yeah, no, I think the one buck tag would be very beneficial. I mean, Michigan has one of the highest rates. I don't know exactly where it ranks, but in terms of deer vehicle collisions. And then also, I mean, I can understand why states are concerned with CWD, but I mean, checking down the doe population is going to be one way to do that. I hunt in Wisconsin. I have before, and I'm gonna go out this year to whitetail hunt, but I thought it was the coolest thing when I went and bought my tag 2 years ago, and the second I bought my buck tag, they were like, "All right, here you go. Here's your three doe tags. What county and what weapon do you want them for?" And that was all I had to do, was just pick the county and the weapon. And I had three doe tags for free. So I wouldn't be upset. I'm not a Michigan resident anymore, so I don't pay resident fees anymore, but and I honestly don't even remember what the deer tags are. Are they still like $20 for a combo? What's a combo?
Boy, I don't remember because I buy, like six deer tags, but well, and they're changing everything now. But as of last year, it was like $11 for the base license. I think it's 26 for the combo tag, and then $20 per doe tag, which is ridiculous. And they had talks about bringing that down to $5, which we covered on the podcast, and then we covered just a couple episodes ago. Now they're talking about lowering the price of a doe tag, but upping the price of all of your licenses. So, your license would double essentially. Fishing license for out of state is like a, it's gonna go up to like a $700 whatever. Like, there's some crazy stuff going on with it. And I understand the DNR needs to make money, but go to a $1 tag. Drop doe tags down. I don't know that you need to go down to $5. I mean, that's cool, but cut it in half, put them at 10. You're probably going to have more people just be like, screw it, I'll shoot a doe.
I mean, 20 is kind of like a lot for a doe, honestly. I mean,
100%.
especially when you're someone like my dad and just has a bajillion of them and need to control the population.
Yeah, I
I
think there
mean,
was eight shot on the property this year, and
yeah.
there's still plenty. I mean,
Yeah.
into February, I was getting pictures of like six, seven, in a group just walking through.
Yeah, and I can understand that, like, they're getting matching Pittman Roberts and funds and all that and stuff, and can understand that they need money to do what they do, but I think at a certain point the health of the herds needs to come first, and I'm not sold on the way they manage currently.
Yeah, and that's we've talked about it before. That's the frustrating part is there's a template there. I mean, all you have to do is look at a state that used to be really poor when it came to deer hunting. Yeah, they used to have really poor deer hunting, and now it's great. So look at states like, well, first of all, look at how Illinois bounced back. Look at states like Ohio. Even states like Pennsylvania, who have always kind of been known for deer hunting, but they've continued to kind of stick with the groove. And I know those guys have had their fair share of issues with EHD and CWD. There's, whatever, whether it's there or not, just affecting deer herds. But, we can't just immediately adopt, say, Iowa's deer regulations because we don't have an Iowa deer herd. We have a Michigan deer herd. So we have to reassess what the issue is and solve it in a manner so we can get to, a much better hunting regulation. I just, what they're doing, they're trying to do, they either do not enough or they try to do too much at once, and they need to focus more on the regulations of the harvest itself and not just the regulations of the fees. Because I think that's the problem, is they're trying to raise a bunch of money for research and things like that. It's like the research is out there. You just got to follow it. It's no, the white-tailed deer is no different in Ohio than it is in Michigan, except for the fact that it's got an extra 30 pounds and an extra 25 inches of antler because it's got proper nutrition.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you still do a fair bit of bow hunting, correct?
Yeah, I didn't really bow hunt at all this last fall.
Okay.
But yeah, I need to start shooting my bow again. I really want a archery elk hunt this year. I went out a couple times last year. Danner and I just went a little bit during the season. He, because of the elk guiding thing, he's pretty well busy September onward, and
100%.
so and there's not much good elk hunting around us, and these elk are really really heavily pressured, so we try not to hunt around us. Lots of wolves.
Oh, gotcha.
So we don't really hunt these elk, but so yeah, kind of got to travel for it, but it's a goal of ours this year to archery elk hunt some more.
That's really cool. Yeah, and you have a sweet setup.
Yeah, I need to. I'm gonna put a new sight on my bow. I'm either gonna do the Ultra View or the dialed. I've got a slider right now, and I just don't like the one I've got. So
I've got an
I'll
Ultra
probably
View
be.
UV slider sitting over there. I'm staring at it right now, going on my new bow.
Nice, cool. Well, always here's my question of which one you'd recommend.
Yeah, the dialed sights, unfortunately, so the UV slider is a little bit heavier because it's aluminum. The dialed sight is like plastic, and they work pretty well. It works really good on like a Total Archery Challenge rig, which is what a lot of guys will run. Because the sight actually comes closer to the bow the further you dial it down. So you can extend your range a lot further without having to have a super light arrow or a super heavy poundage. But unfortunately, the construction quality of those sights is just not up to snuff with the price tag. So it's a little unfortunate. Still a pretty decent sight. I mean, it's better than the 5-pin True Glow I grew up shooting. This guy right here, which the viewers can't see the sights, but Vivian can. So it's
Yeah, I have just like a the same sight that came on this bow when I set it up, like the Trophy Ridge single
oh,
pin
yeah.
slider, and I want to have a fixed 20, a fixed 30. I mean, I feel like very rarely in bow hunting are you like, oh shit, like okay, hang on a second, I need to let down because you just walked out another 20 yards, like you spooked out to 20 yards, like 20 yards further, chased a doe or something, you know. Like, oh, let me let down and unscrew my little thing and move my sight. Like, it causes me more stress to not have fixed pins. I like having a slider, so I want to get something where where I know I have a couple pins available, not just one.
Yeah, 100%. And that Ultra View comes in clutch there because they've got a bunch of different cartridges. You just pick whichever one fits you best. I've got a 3-pin cartridge in my slider right now. That's exactly how I set it up. So it'll be 20, 30, 40. And then I'll have the slider and I'll just use the top pin. But then, they're separated roughly 10 yards. So I can set my top pin to say 30 yards, and then I can have 30, 40, 50 if I'm shooting. If I know I'm going to have a little bit of a further shot, or if I'm really close, you just bring it up 20, 30, 40, good to go. So
Yeah.
there's
Yep,
some
I like the
definite
versatility.
100%, and you were kind of set up for failure with that Trophy Ridge sight. I mean, let's not forget Trophy Ridge makes Bear Archery products, or vice versa. So it's one in the same, it's like, ah, it's all right. But
Yeah.
hey, if you need a whisker biscuit, Trophy Ridge is the way to go. I don't recommend a whisker biscuit, but there you go. Yeah. So, the audience, I'm sure, is tired of hearing about this new bow because it's been several weeks now of waiting. The bow is here, ladies and gentlemen. The bow is here. It is sitting at the pro shop. They are waiting for me to go pick it up. All we are waiting on right now are the mods because it has 70-pound mods on it, and obviously I'm going to shoot 80 pounds like we talked about. So that's all we're waiting on. And then another announcement: Justin and I, obviously Jared's moving away, so he probably won't be a part of the channel, at least not regularly. But Justin and I are starting a Knox and Nature YouTube channel, so stay tuned for more information on that. Whether it's on the podcast or on Instagram, we'll give more information. But we're going to be doing a bow build, and that'll be One of, if not the first video on the channel is build my 2025 hunting rig. So it'll be pretty sweet. Yeah. I went with the Lift RS, little tiny tree stand bow. It should be fun.
Yeah, those lifts are pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I was actually going to set up my Creed here for turkey hunting. I didn't have enough time to mess around with flu-flus and everything like that. It was just whatever. So I'll just end up using the shotgun. But actually, you have harvested more turkeys with that thing than I have. So I guess there's that, you know?
It's funny. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good gun. We, Danner has a cool little, it's a CVA Scout 410. And honestly, I love it. It's just, it's perfect. It's, I never feel like, I feel like the time I shot your gun, I was like thrown backwards. Cause I mean, you're turkey hunting, you're crouching, you're up against something and it's like, whoa, 12 gauge to the shoulder. So I love that little gun. It's a lot of fun, but I'm like a 12 gauge. But I have had a lot of fun.
Some of those 410s are like little sniper rifles, you know, they work pretty well. That's the disadvantage of my gun. It's a 12 gauge. It's got 28 inch barrel, full turkey choke. I mean, you can kill a turkey out to 60 yards with that gun. The disadvantage of that is you're shooting an ounce 3/4 of lead. It's number 5 shot. I shoot Winchester, Longbeard XR turkey loads. Like it's just a lot of lead to move. And so it moves your shoulder a lot. Even for me, it's uncomfortable. It's also an inertia driven gun. So it takes some of the recoil, but when it does send that bolt back, you feel all of it when it bottoms out on that spring.
Yeah. Yep.
Worked well though. So there's that.
So
you killed a turkey last weekend then in Montana?
Yeah. Yep. Last Saturday with the 410. And then we're actually going to go. So turkeys, I won't say nationwide. I don't know the exact stats, but they're on pretty much a decline, I think, throughout most of the U.S. I know the South is having a lot of issues and all that, but turkeys are like thriving in Montana, so we can actually get a couple tags here. So I used my general turkey tag, and then I still have two more tags, actually. I'll probably only end up trying to fill one of them, but we're just going to a different area where I have a tag this weekend for just, we do it every year, like a little weekend camping turkey hunting trip.
That's awesome. Yeah. We just have the one, and then you got to pick, you know, whichever season you want, which mine actually is the early season. Technically started last Saturday, but I went out horseback riding instead. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I kind of surprised myself. I thought it was going to be a lot more difficult to stay on, especially when we got going. We got up, you know, running, I guess. He wasn't at a full gallop, but he was, they're Tennessee walkers, you know, so they got that weird stride.
Oh, like, yeah, they're gated. Yep.
Yeah. And so he was pretty smooth, but though when he galloped, I think twice. I don't know for sure because I obviously wasn't watching him. I know at the end we ran, it was like 100 yards back to the trailer. And he started galloping, and I was like, okay, like, if I was doing this for 20 minutes and trying to get back, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. The horse is going to go where he wants to go because I can't control him.
That's funny.
But it was a lot of fun. And then Sunday we had a little, what was Sunday? I had something else going on Sunday. I couldn't turkey hunt, but I don't know. I don't prioritize it the same way I would prioritize whitetail hunting. It's kind of just something to do. I'm not very good at it, as you've been witness to. So there's that.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know. I think turkey hunting can be pretty fun. I honestly Tanner and I were ranking our favorite turkey hunts the other day because he said my turkey from last Saturday is one of his favorites. But honestly, the bird I killed in Michigan is my top favorite, and the one him and I killed his bird last year in Michigan, also with Nick's gun, is my second favorite hunt. So Michigan birds are on top for me. They're a little bit harder, honestly. We were kind of infuriated that week. It was just like we felt like we were doing everything wrong. And don't get me wrong, it's okay when the turkey wins. I've last weekend, right before I killed mine, I thought I had blown my chance, and I wasn't bummed at all. I was like, wow, it was no decoys. Like, we called him in from pretty far, and he just came right in looking for us and looking around, and it was just like true old school, no decoys, like super legit turkey hunting. And he came into somewhere where I probably could have shot, but I wasn't 100% certain it was ethical. He was 10 yards in front of me, but there was some brush in the way, and I just didn't like it. I don't know. Yeah, so I thought I blew it, and then I ended up getting another chance. But in the meantime, I was like, wow, that was so cool. If I don't kill this bird, I don't care. He ended up circling behind us and gobbled like 4 yards behind Danner. I mean, you know he's close when you can feel him gobble. Like, we felt it through the ground. It was insane. It was a lot of fun. So yeah, when turkeys do it the way you think they're gonna do it, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And
4 yards.
it was wild. I mean, yeah, right behind us, just right there, felt it through the ground. It was nuts. On the note of turkeys, I've got a couple ideas of some turkey recipes, so I might end up making those a little freebie. If anyone's interested, I think I'll just be emailing that out as a little freebie from the ebook.
Yeah, right on. That's pretty sweet. 'Cause I was actually talking to a buddy of mine today about that. It has been forever since I've even had a wild turkey, let alone remembered how it was prepared or anything like that. So I was like, I don't actually even know how to cook this. Like, I guess I can just cook it, you know, like it's turkey, right? Cook it the same way. But yeah, they're just a completely different type of animal. They're smart, but they're stupid at the same sense. I mean, I remember the first year that I was turkey hunting, and we chased that bird around all day. We should have just sat in place. We're like, we thought we were doing everything wrong, and we started out doing it all right. We just needed to be a little more patient.
Yeah, Danner and I had that happen last year when we were hunting Michigan. We sat somewhere and called for a while, and there was nothing, no gobbles, no nothing. And we were like, all right, they're just not around here. And we went somewhere else and circled back to that area. Like, seriously, it might have only been half an hour later, and a bird was standing, strutting exactly where we had been calling, like exactly where we were sitting and calling and set up that morning. And he was seriously strutting and drumming where we had been sitting. Like, he went right there, and it just amazes me. They're really cool animals, and I feel like they don't get as much credit. And I mean, people in Michigan aren't really that big into turkey hunting. It's definitely bigger here, but they're beautiful. I mean, they're really cool. I love watching turkeys do turkey stuff, and I don't know. I think they're cool. I love their fans. I'm not a big fan of turkey feet. They kind of creep me out, but so I'm not a big spur fan. I think spurs
Yeah,
are cool, but
I'm
the
with you.
rest of the feet, I could do without. But the beards are cool. Their faces and the colors and the way they change the color of their head, like, I don't know. They're really cool animals. And honestly, if you ever want really good turkey recipes, a book that I really love, it's called The Turkey Book, and it is a compilation of, I can't think of the authors now, but they wrote about just kind of traveling the country and shooting all the different subspecies of turkey. And like, they just compiled a bunch of recipes that were kind of inspired by that region. So from when they went down south, they have a recipe in there that's like a fried turkey, and it's just like turkey tenders, kind of like turkey fingers, if you will. and it's like, I think it's marinated in pickle juice maybe and buttermilk, and like it's a little bit hot, and we fry them, and oh, it's so good. It's like better than any fried chicken I've ever had, and it's fried wild turkey. It's incredible.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Now, this might be a stupid question, but what kind of turkeys do you have out there? What's in that too?
Merriam's turkeys.
Okay, they are Merriam's. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, I wasn't sure because I was like, man, I don't think that wouldn't be an Eastern. So, yeah.
No.
That's yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's incredible to me though, like you were describing, because I've never moose hunted before, but I've watched a lot of moose hunts on YouTube, and well, you know James, spoke to a few people who've been moose hunting, and it's pretty incredible that they know, even like, you know, I've heard of the next day, like 8 hours later, and they can be within 50 yards of where you were calling from. They just know. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I think that's where turkeys maybe don't get as much credit, and I kind of go back and forth. Like I don't know. Maybe I need to just do some more research. I don't know how much we know about turkey brains and how smart they are or aren't, but I am definitely a little bit curious. The
Yeah.
dog just came in. The heck?
Yeah, it's a different animal. I just popped into my head, but you were talking about Michigan related crashes. I saw a study, I want to say it was from 2020, so this is several years ago. But like out of all the states, Michigan was ranked third, or they were in the top five for total deer harvested. And like half of that came from vehicle related crashes. We're number two in the country, at least as of 2020, for vehicle related crashes with whitetail, behind Pennsylvania. So there's just an unbelievable, and if you drive Michigan roads, it's not a surprise. Like you're going to
No.
see deer on the side of the road, and you're going to see dead deer on the side of the road pretty much anywhere you go,
Yeah.
especially up north where we're at. So, it's definitely a problem, and it's just way overpopulation. There are deer who literally starve to death in the wintertime because there's not enough nutrition. You know, there's just too many deer and not enough food to go around. And it's just becomes a mess, you know? So, yeah, I think it, you know, difference in opinions when it comes to what's a priority in Michigan for conservation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to see, I mean, just how different states manage. I mean, elk are managed super differently depending on what elk state you're in. I mean, yeah, it's just interesting, and it's cool to learn the science that informs those principles and what works and what doesn't, and what works in some states might not work in others, and all of that. It's definitely an ever-evolving field, and I think there's a lot of good people in wildlife biology, and a lot of good people that are going to drive some good change in the future. It's just curious to see what that's going to look like. Is your truck insurance pretty high? I thought I had heard that Michigan auto insurance went up because of all these vehicle collisions.
My insurance on my truck went up $600 annually.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So part of that was my truck was originally registered in my dad's name. Because I bought it, I think I was 19 when I bought it, and so insurance was just like crazy, crazy high for me, regardless at that point. But then the other part of that is, yes, they jacked insurance way up. I mean, it's still very affordable for me because I drive a 2009 Tacoma, and it's, you know, I paid for the truck outright, so it's not, but it does have full coverage on it, and it's I don't know. I'm not really complaining about it, for the people who are driving you know, $80,000-$90,000 vehicles, I feel bad for you. But yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And I'm just based on where you live, you know, it's going to be craziness.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, here we've got elk and all that too to worry about hitting. So
100%. Yeah. So before we wrap things up here, I know we've been going for a little while, but you've talked about, we've talked about grouse hunting, or mentioned grouse hunting, elk hunting, whitetail, turkey. What is your favorite animal to hunt?
Hmm.
Or can you not pick a favorite?
I don't know. I mean, all things considered, I feel like I haven't even elk hunted all that much. I mean, the very first day I went out last year, my first ever elk hunt, I got to watch Danner kill a bull, and we packed it out together, and that was super cool. And then my bull was, yeah, this was my first year having an elk tag because I wasn't a resident in the 2023 season. So it was opening day of rifle season when I killed my bull. I hunted a fair amount of days with Danner for his bull tag last year, but all in all, I haven't elk hunted all that much by any means. I guess I archery hunted a little bit last year too, so it wasn't technically my first day hunting elk, but my first day with any real odds, it was kind of just taking the bow for a walk, and we took the dog and he flushed some grouse and that sort of thing when we archery hunted. So I don't really count it all that much, but yeah, I don't know. I've loved my elk encounters. They're just beautiful animals. I mean, they're giant, and I don't know. There's just something really cool about elk.
Yeah, I'd only seen elk. We saw elk when we were in Colorado. That was my first time seeing elk, like in the mountains, in the wild, whatever. I saw a cow elk standing on the side of the road in, you know, northeast Michigan one time. That's the only time I had ever seen an elk in the wild until I went to Utah. And it was, or on the Utah trip, we were in Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park in Colorado. And yeah, it's just it's crazy. And it's, what's absurd to me is how large they are, but how well they move, how fast they can traverse not only difficult terrain, but steep terrain. And like just, you know, jagged rocks, whatever. And they move so easily, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. They're cool. And I've definitely, I guess we haven't really touched on this yet, and I'm certainly not speaking on this podcast in like my official capacity as an employee of the organization I work for, but I work with elk. I don't work with elk directly, but I read and write people's stories about hunting elk and write about elk biology and elk news and just literally all things elk, anything you could think of with elk, all day, every day for my job. So
you can shout it out if you want to. I'm not sure if you want to give that information out, but
yeah, it's fine. Yeah. So anywho, I write about them a lot all day and read about them a ton. So it's just been cool to be super immersed and talk to so many people that are super passionate about elk and conservation. And obviously a lot of the work that the organization does touches other animals. It touches whitetail and muleys and grouse and cutthroat trout. And I mean, and there's elk in a bunch of eastern states now. Like it's certainly not just a confined to the West type of thing. And it's been cool 100%. To work with so many conservation minded people who are just super passionate about wildlife and the hunting heritage and all that. So, that was a long winded answer to say that elk are super cool, and yeah, I've become really captivated by them, especially by spending when my job is for me to be engrossed in the stories of elk and elk hunting and the joy they bring people. I've read lots of stories where people go elk hunting and come home empty handed, and it's still the thing they think to write it when they want to write an elk hunting story. So I think there's just something about elk that has like a certain impression on people, and I don't know. They're just a captivating animal.
Yeah, it's always been one of my favorite animals for sure. There's actually just a couple, you'd mentioned elk in eastern states. Just a couple of years ago, I wrote a paper when I was in college about elk being back in Kentucky. So that's pretty, or not Kentucky. I think it was one of the Carolinas or something like that, but they were coming from Kentucky.
Yep. Yeah, Kentucky has a super robust herd that's just because, I mean, so originally Kentucky elk would have came from Montana or Wyoming somewhere, which would have most, so elk were pretty much extirpated from most of, I mean, all of the East by far, and then a lot of the West. So the Yellowstone elk herd was really kind of the founding. I mean, Yellowstone elk are what went into Arizona, and now Arizona has like a really stellar herd. So Yellowstone elk were kind of they're the original gene pool of a lot of the elk in the U.S. And that's where the Kentucky elk eventually came from. But now for the East, it's Kentucky's elk that are kind of helping kickstart all these other herds. So yeah, North Carolina has elk. I think that's the Carolina you're thinking of. And then Kentucky elk have gone to West Virginia. Pennsylvania also has a really strong herd. Lots of good work goes on there. West Virginia, also really cool. There's lots of really great people there doing lots of cool stuff with elk over there. So,
yeah, I couldn't remember if it was North Carolina or if it was West Virginia. I might have written about both of them. Like I said, this is, you know, I'm talking 3 years ago now. It'd been like 2022 because I think it was freshman year. But yeah, just crazy, crazy cool animal, and crazy how much they can move around, just like migratory patterns or rut patterns and stuff like that. They can cover a lot of ground. Crazy.
Yeah, they're pretty cool animals, and I mean they're super tough too, and just the conditions they live in and the country they live in, and I mean some of these migration corridors they take are just ancient. I mean like they've been doing it for thousands of like years and just taking the same migration path. And I think as we continue to expand, by we I mean people as a whole, it's important that there's so many people that have this sort of love for these animals, because we're just putting continual pressures on them and disrupting some of these historic migrations and all of that. So it's cool to be engrossed in conservation and see that there's a lot of people that care. And I think that's one thing I definitely tried to steep into the ebook is, even if you don't hunt, I want it to be recipes you can try, but maybe you read a little bit about just how, as hunters, we care so much about the animal. And I also think talking about eating meat, which from wild game, which is something I give Steve Rinella a lot of credit for, is just putting that at the forefront is something that I think is really important for us to do as hunters, is just to talk about how much we care about the meat and just how cool it is to fill the freezer yourself. I think that's something that's important for ensuring that hunting goes on, is just talking about it freely. That's why I was hesitant to share about the ebook on my social media, just from a perspective of putting myself out there. Obviously my writing is out there in the world all over, and the magazine I write for goes out to 200,000 plus people, but still just there was something a little nerve-wracking about my social media. But I think if we all can get a little bit better about just kind of putting meat at the forefront and showing people it's not just grip and grins, it's also a good elk steak, and like sharing it with friends and family. I brought some elk meat home. You can talk to my dad. He might have some. I didn't bring you any, I don't think. Sorry about that. But there might be some left.
You don't have to worry about that.
House. But yeah, you can talk to my dad. I bet he's still got some. But anywho, like just sharing it with people, hunters, non-hunters, and I don't know, talking about meat and how important it is, and to hunt for that reason. That, yeah, it's not just about killing. It's about more than that. And I think that's important to put out there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I don't duck hunt. It's because I don't like duck, you know? So
If
I guess there's that.
you do duck hunt, though, I have a recipe in the book that I got inspiration for from one of my favorite wild game chefs, Danielle Pruitt, and she had a duck fat chocolate chip cookie recipe in her cookbook, which is called Wild and Whole, which is a really good cookbook. I was super excited for that one to come out. And I was like, okay, this sounds interesting. And I tried the cookies and they were so good. So I just have a quick little explanation in the book of how I actually got the duck fat to use in the cookies. And essentially, like, at first I was like, oh, duck fat, that sounds horrible. Why would you put that in cookies? But really use it kind of just like a like how your grandma used to use like Crisco and cookies type of thing. It's
100%.
the same thing. So, and I was really amazed at how clean the duck fat was. I thought it was going to be kind of gross. Like even the deer tallow when I rendered it down was a little stinky and I just wasn't a huge fan of it, but it was really clean. It didn't stink. I had no reservations about throwing it into the cookie mix, and they were literally the best cookies of my life. So, if you're interested in how to actually take fat off a duck, because they're usually, I mean, these were ducks we killed in December, so they weren't super fat by any means. These aren't like corn-eating fatties by any means. So, learning how to harvest the fat off the ducks, which isn't super hard, but it's kind of tedious. There's not much fat on them, so
For
that's
sure.
in the book.
I remember seeing that post actually, I think, when you posted those pictures in December. So you shot, you had a decent haul of them. Shot a
Yeah.
few of them.
Yeah, I think we had maybe like a two-man limit. There was three of us. I didn't buy my, we were hunting up on like the reservation, so I didn't buy my reservation permit.
Gotcha.
So I wasn't hunting. I was just, we have a he just turned 1 year-old lab. So I was dog handler that day, but Danner and I and our buddy hunted, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun watching the dog work.
Yeah, and he's adorable. So
He is pretty
it's
cute.
hard to not. Yeah. Right on. Well, I think we pretty much covered it. Was there anything else you wanted to add, as far as your book goes? Kind of spreading that out there. Anything else you wanted to say about that?
Not really. So it's in my Instagram bio, which is kind of the easiest way I can think of to describe where it is. Because it's kind of hard to find in terms of just Googling it. It's hosted on a platform called Gumroad, and it might even be like a little bit shadow banned because we know how that goes. So it's hard to even Google. So I would just say at my Instagram, which is at Vivien, Vivien dot Felker, Felker. That's my Instagram. It's in the bio, in my bio there. And I will look into if I can get like a discount code or something for your listeners. I think I can set one up. If I do, I'll just make it Knox and Nature, and Nick, you can
Sweet.
post like
Yeah.
if I end up making that happen, but I should be able to. Yeah, it's $8 and it's 18 pages, I think, of lots of good stuff. So.
There's some really cool stuff in there. If wild game, and maybe not even wild game, but just cooking in general, because I'm sure you could adapt these recipes to other types of meat, you know, not necessarily venison or duck or something like that. But if that is your thing, I would highly recommend checking it out. So we'll create a post and tag Vivian's Instagram on our page. Like I said, we'll pin that post. If you're listening to this on release day, it'll be in the story of the Instagram. And then check out Vivian's page because she's got some cool stuff on there as far as hunting and cooking and all kinds of fun adventures. So yeah. That's pretty much that.
Thanks. This was fun.
Yeah,
Appreciate
100%.
your help talking about it and getting the word out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and now that we've got this remote podcast set up and whatnot, I'd love to get both you and Danner on, get to talking more into the nitty gritty stuff when it comes to hunting and fishing too. So I think that's really cool. Do you want to give a shout out to the fly shop or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. So the fly shop, it's called Clark Fork Trout. If you're ever in the area, it's in St. Regis, Montana. It's a full service fly shop. We've got rods, reels, flies, pretty much everything. Huck and I are in there pretty much every day. My job's remote, so I work out of there. Danner guides guided trips out on the rivers. A lot of fun, beginners to experts, all welcome. He's a really good teacher. He taught me, so that says a lot. He's very patient. So yeah, we love it. He just bought it last June, and it's been a lot of fun to grow a business together and learn how to do all the things. So we're really proud of it. And the Instagram is just at Clark Fork Trout. And we have some t-shirts, we have some hats. If anything piques your interest, we can mail it anywhere. So we're pretty proud of it. It's a lot of fun. Huck loves living the shop dog life. He gets tons of attention. I think there's people that come into the shop just for Huck. So
that'd be me. It's hard to complain. I'm not good at fishing.
Yeah, he's got a little fan club. I think we're going to have to get a Huck sticker made. So
yeah, there you go.
Stand by on that one.
Right on. Well, I appreciate your time. Best luck with your book. And, let us know if you got any updates, if you end up releasing some more recipes or maybe a second book or something like that. Be sure to let me know.
Yeah, I will.
Sweet. We appreciate everyone for listening. Like I said, if you want to check out Vivian's ebook, head over to either Vivian's Instagram page, Vivian.Felker.
Yep.
Is that what it is? Either Vivian.Felker, or you can head over to the Knox and Nature page, Knox and Nature _podcast. You'll be able to find the ebook both ways. I think $8 for that is a steal. That's a cup of coffee, people. If this is your deal, go check it out. So, yeah, appreciate everyone for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode. Thanks.